If you're just joining us, we're looking at the state of the retail industry in 2020 here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What we do know is that it's a very uncertain time for big box stores and low-cost retailers. There's a potential fallout from tariff tensions. There's a potential economic downturn. So 1 year ago this week, Shopko filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. Others that went down this past year, Gymboree, Payless, Shoe Source, Forever 21. Have you seen a national retailer close recently in your area? Which one? How has that affected your shopping habits? Did you work for a retailer that shut down? Could you find another job? We're at 800-642-1234. Charlie O'Shea is a vice president and retail analyst at Moody's Investor Service. Moody's is a provider of credit ratings, research, and risk analysis. Charlie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Great to be here.
So why are you seeing more U.S. department stores filing for bankruptcy? What's going on?
Well, I think let's look at retail in a broader context for a second. We saw a huge boom in new store construction during, I would say, from 2000, say, till 2012. And that occurred at the same time that there was kind of a nascent shift going on online with Amazon and some of the other pure play online guys, as well as some of the brick and mortar. So when you look at the landscape in 2012, there were far too many stores. And we're still struggling with a square footage issue in retail, although I think the stores, the individual store concepts and amounts are starting to stabilize a little bit. There's still too much square footage. So you deal with that. Then a lot of these companies that have run into trouble have been subjects of leverage buyouts. They're owned by financial sponsors. They have too much debt. And one of the kind of buzz phrases around here is you can't outrun debt. And a lot of these companies just couldn't do it. When you layer the debt load on top of the investments necessary to make the change into a, you know, an online world, you just don't have enough money. I mean, think about the family budget. When you know you get your paycheck, you've only got X amount of dollars to handle everything. And if there's something new happening or an unforeseen event, you can't deal with it. And that's what happened in retail. You know, there were a lot of retailers, 06, 07, 08, that were bought by sponsors. And I don't think it's fair to say that anybody should really have seen the explosion in online back in 2005, 2006, 2007. Amazon was pretty small back then. And it was still kind of, yeah, it's getting there. Even in 2012, we published a piece in November of 2012. Online sales were only about 7% of U.S. retail sales. Now they're 16, 17, depending on how you categorize it. But it was difficult back then to envision what would happen. And what has happened is the world's gotten a lot more complicated for retailers, and it's tough. It's really tough. I've been covering the sector for 17-plus years here and years before that, and I've never seen it more competitive and tougher to do business if you're not well-capitalized, large, strong, et cetera.
Yeah, what I'm hearing, too, is it's been a time of reset, resizing, and managing risk.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think when you look at the challenges facing retailers right now, again, you've got what I mentioned before. You've got to be able to invest in your stores because the store is still going to be 80 to 90% of your revenue. We're at, you know, roughly 85, 83% of U.S. retail sales are still done in a store. So they're still important. You need an online presence, and you need to manage your balance sheet. So you've basically got a three-legged stool here. And if one of those legs doesn't work well, you don't have a stool anymore. You're sitting on the ground. And a lot of the retailers that don't have the financial flexibility haven't been able to execute those strategies. It's no secret that the best performing retailers are the biggest ones. You've got Walmart, Target, Costco, Best Buy, Amazon, and then on the off-price side, you've got TJX and Ross. And these guys have had the money, they've had the ability to execute a strategy, and they've been able to get time. And time is important. You can't do this overnight. It takes a lot of money, but it also takes time. It took Amazon a long time to get to a point where it was stable and scaled. and that was without a brick and mortar business to run. I would argue that it's harder to take a brick and mortar business and build an online business than it is to build an online business from scratch without brick and mortar.
Charlie, where are these companies accumulating so much debt? Is it from building stores? Where is that debt coming from?
Some of it's that, but a lot of it came from, and if you look at, you know, if you go back and look over the last 5 or 6 years at the retailers that have either that have defaulted, which for us is a broader term than just filed for bankruptcy, because we consider payment defaults, and we also consider something called a distressed exchange, where a company swaps debt, existing debt, for better terms to avoid a default. If you look at that landscape, you'll find an awful lot of those companies were subject to leverage buyouts led by management or led by financial sponsors. That loads companies up with debt. I covered Toys R Us for 15 years, and when Toys did its leverage buyout, picked up about $7 billion worth of debt, and it never got out from under it. It's very hard for management to run a company, in this, particularly in this environment, where, again, you've got to make all these investments, and you've got to come up with a strategy. You've got to sometimes execute it on the fly. And if you're worried about the next debt maturity, you can't think about your strategy. One of the things that we've talked about a lot here at Moody's is CEOs are made to run businesses. They are not made to go sit and negotiate with bankers. And I think what you'll find over the last several years with the companies that have had problems, those CEOs have had to do things that they shouldn't have to do. They've got to sit down with bankers. They've got to explain their businesses, walk through business plans. That takes their eye off the ball of running a company. And it's really hard to run a retailer these days.
Talking with Charlie O'Shea, he's a vice president and retail analyst at Moody's Investors Service, and he oversees coverage of companies like Walmart and Target and Amazon. What are your thoughts on retailers having to close down? What concerns do you have? How should that issue be addressed in your community? Are you a small business owner? Has your location perhaps benefited from a national retailer going out of business? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie, is Amazon as dominant as we might think?
Depends on what lens you look through. If you look at it through an online lens, yes. If you look at it through a total U.S. retail lens, no. We estimate U.S. retail, just keep the math simple. It's easier for me to think that way. U.S. retail sales are about $4 trillion. Amazon, adding the third-party business is, you know, $250, $300, depending on how you weigh the third-party business. So in terms of online sales, and we assume online sales are about 16 or 17% of retail. So doing the math, Amazon is dominant online. They've got 40-plus percent of the online market share in the U.S., but that's not that big when you scale it to the entire U.S. Walmart does roughly $400 billion in revenue in the U.S., including Sam's. So Amazon, yes, it's dominant online. One of the things that Amazon is dealing with now is the power of brick and mortar to leverage those assets to support its online business. Buy online, pick up in store has become a huge weapon for brick and mortar. If you really want something same day, in almost all of the U.S., the only way to get it is to go to the store. Amazon bought Whole Foods. Our premise with the Whole Foods purchase was it was having trouble scaling its food business without brick and mortar. It's got brick and mortar. Whole Foods is performing fairly well. It's still a small player in food. So when you look at Amazon, you look at it and say, okay, if I'm looking to buy something online, my search is going to start with Amazon. I think that's a given. But Amazon isn't always going to be the best price, nor going to provide you with the product as quickly as you may want. So the challenge for a brick-and-mortar retailer is to be that second site. So if you bounce off Amazon, you go there. That said, Amazon has Amazon Web Services, the cloud storage business, which generates huge profits, steady profitability, and it allows Amazon to absorb some of the things that it has to do on the retail side, like Prime one-day delivery, which is going to cost the company $4 to $4.5 billion in 2019, and will cost money during 2020 as well. Amazon is doing everything it can to keep its Prime members happy, and it costs money to do that. Mm. And one of the ways to keep Prime members happy is get them product faster. so that they don't decide to take advantage of a buy online, pick up in store offer from a brick and mortar retailer.
Well, let's take a call on this. Marianne is joining us from Superior. Hi, Marianne.
Good morning. As I was telling your screener, I have been living in Superior all my life, and I was here for our boom time, and then I was here to watch the deterioration and the bust that happened. And I'm very happy to report that I am seeing in our downtown and Belknap Avenue corridor many small businesses, at least 17 or 18, that are doing a very good business and working very hard, but they're small community businesses that are giving one of the things that I have seen lost in big box is customer service.
Customer service,
biggie.
Yeah, Marianne, thanks for the call. Charlie, Marianne seeing on her main street that small businesses are a win right now because of relationships with customers.
No question. There is definitely a place for the small retailer in this environment. The small retailer needs to do exactly what your caller just said. They have to provide great customer service. You've got to hang on to those customers. You've got to cherish them. You've got to treat them like gold. If someone takes the time to come to your store, you have to make it worth their while because it's a big commitment. It's a big investment of time to go to a brick-and-mortar store when you could very easily sit on your couch, pull out a tablet or your phone, and buy something online without going through the quote-unquote hassle of going to the store. So these retailers, the smaller, niche ones, have got to identify their customers. They've got to take care of them. They have to find a way to market to them, be it online, through the mail, whatever, and just hold on to those relationships. If you look at the success of Best Buy over the last several years, it's because of the store experience and the way they treat their customers and the expertise in those stores.
We have to pause right there with Charlie O'Shea as we get a read on the retail industry. Back in a moment with Moody's Charlie O'Shea right here on the Ideas Network. We're getting a read on the state of the retail industry here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So it seems like going out of business sales are around every corner. There was Shopko and GameStop, Gap, other chains shut down more than 9,300 stores last year, making it the biggest year ever for store closings. We have our eye this year on JCPenney, Bed Bath & Beyond, Pier 1. Were you a frequent Shopko shopper? What are your thoughts on the store closing last year? Are you concerned that your favorite store will be next? 800-642-1234. Charlie O'Shea stays with us. He's a vice president at Moody's, tracking Walmart, Target, Best Buy, and other retailers. Let's go back to the phones now. Ray is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Ray.
The big problem I have with Amazon and a lot of the big tech companies is they have figured out how to game our tax system. And brick-and-mortar stores wind up paying state and local taxes. They keep our schools going. They keep the roads right. But Amazon, this gigantic whale, pays zero in taxes. How in the world can this be good for us? And I say in 10 years, I'd love to have this conversation again, when it's just Amazon and a couple of giant online companies, and you will be able to buy nothing locally.
Ray, thanks for the call. He sees the demise here and a faulty tax structure. Charlie?
I don't think we're going to be living in a world where it's just Amazon and a few brick-and-mortar retailers. I think that the brick-and-mortar retailers have demonstrated significant resilience over the last few years once they decided to get into the business and get into online in a big way. They hadn't invested in it in the past, and now they are. And you've got Walmart growing its online business 30-40% a year, Target, same thing. So I think the fears of Amazon, much like I've covered Walmart for a long time, and when Walmart was rolling out supercenters, there were worries that it was just going to destroy Main Street retail. And it did take some market share away from Main Street retail. You don't get the $500 billion in revenue without taking share from somebody. But the better Main Street type retailers, as we talked about earlier, have basically survived. They've come out the other side. They figured out how to take care of their customers, and they're doing okay. As far as the tax situation is concerned, that's not something I'm ready to address at this point. I really haven't. I really didn't prep on that part of it. But
yeah.
Amazon employs a lot of people, and they pay a lot of wages, and those employees pay an awful lot in income taxes. And Amazon is, you get tax deductions for investment, and Amazon invests heavily, and that creates a lot of jobs. So I think we have to look a little bit deeper into the tax question to really find out what's happening here.
Let's go to John now in Delafield. John, hi.
Hi, good morning. I agree with the previous comment. I mean, Amazon is, I'm sure, full compliance with the tax code. They don't have an obligation to pay any more than they're entitled to, and they're a great employer. But my question pertains more to the bricks and mortar investments that they've made in terms of not just the fulfillment centers, but what we see for drop-off and pick-up locations. And I'm curious if Mr. O'Shea can comment on whether that's an evolving trend, and we'll see more and more of that, and even actual storefronts with products from the likes of online retailers.
Oh, are you talking about those drop boxes where you can return products and things like that, John?
Yes, that's okay. Part of it. And then I'm also curious if you'll see storefronts, in other words, like traditional bricks and mortar storefronts, but fully funded and staffed by the online retailers.
Yeah. Charlie, what do you see out there?
Well, if you're a pure play online retailer and you ignore brick and mortar, you are ignoring 80%+ of retail sales in the U.S. So I think you need both, and I think we're seeing that with Amazon. You know, the Amazon Go stores, Amazon, the five-star stores, the investment in Whole Foods. So, and Bonobos is open brick and mortar. Warby Parker's open brick and mortar. So I think there's obviously relevance to both, and I think you really do need both to be successful. The brick-and-mortar retailers, those stores are assets. They're not liabilities. The accountants got that right. They are assets. And what I think you'll see, and you'll see more of it going forward, is those stores being milked for everything they're worth from both a brick-and-mortar perspective and an online perspective. You'll see shipping from store, which has been going on for a while. Target does that. You'll see, you know, the buy online, pick up in store. You can't do a buy online, pick up in store without a store, obviously. So I think, you know, we've talked about store closures a lot during this conversation. We haven't hit it head on, and I'll try to do that right now. And this will answer John's question, I think, a little bit better. Retailers really need to think before they close a store, because if you close a store, as your first caller mentioned, it's devastating to that market for your brand. You know, I'm not going to delve into the social stuff, but you lose brand identity. And one thing that we've been tracking, and it's still early stages, obviously, but when a brick-and-mortar retailer closes a store in a certain demographic, in a certain market, they lose online sales in that market because they lose their brand identity. And people are more likely, if they're going to buy online from a brick-and-mortar retailer, will buy from a brick-and-mortar retailer that's not far from their house, so in case something goes wrong, they can return it.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to just unleash those stores, and you'll see them. You know, Kohl's' relationship with Amazon, for instance. I don't cover Kohl's anymore, but that Amazon relationship is a traffic driver, and it's a positive. You'll see, you know, Redbox or the lockers that Amazon uses in various retailers. Anything you can do to get the customer what they want, when they want it, how they want it, is the way you have to run yourself as a retailer these days. The consumer's ruling everything, and the retailers have to recognize that.
Talking with Charlie O'Shea, he's a lead retail analyst at Moody's Investor Service. We're looking at the state of retail in 2020 and where we were in 2019. So, Charlie, I know you don't cover Kohl's, which is based here in Wisconsin. Kohl's is saying, though, that same-store sales during November and December was a little bit off, fell slightly due to a weakness in its women's apparel business. And on the whole, department stores were expected to underperform this holiday season. How tough is competition between department store chains and Target and Walmart?
It's acute. it's very acute right now, and you'd have to throw Amazon into the mix as well because Amazon's selling more apparel. It's really hard. You've got Walmart and Amazon and Target, all three of them, and I'll put Target aside for a second. Walmart and Amazon have been fighting a battle for market share across categories for, I think we're going on 4 years now, if my math is right. And that's hard to compete with because they can source cheaper. They have more financial flexibility. They've got stronger balance sheets. They've got more cash. They can basically, you know, promote and keep things on sale until you can't anymore. And I wouldn't focus so heavily on the sales component here. And I know equity analysts do that, and it's a great headline. But we at Moody's focus on operating income. So selling a dollar for 99 cents is not the way we like companies to do business. So at some point in a heavily promotional environment like we saw this past holiday, and we're still seeing, I mean, the holiday's not over. January, in my mind, is still part of the holiday. What we saw this holiday was heavy promotions. At some point, the limbo bar gets too low price-wise, and you have to walk away. And I think the savvy retailers recognize that, you know what, not all sales are created equal. Not every sale is a good sale. We have to be disciplined. And I think you're seeing a fair amount of that out there right now where, you know, Amazon shareholders don't really worry that much about profitability. And with AWS generating $10 billion a year in operating profit, the retail business can, you know, break even. And the company is still in really good shape. There aren't many retailers out there that have that luxury. In fact, none of them do. So it's important that they focus on the things that they're good at, and it's important they focus on maximizing profits as best they can. And if that means walking away from some low-profit sales or non-profitable sales, then that's what they need to do.
Charlie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Kate. It was great being with you.
Charlie O'Shea is a vice president and retail analyst at Moody's Investor Service. Just ahead, we continue a series on health throughout the different stages of life. Today, it's all about our 20s. We talk with a physician about eating nutritiously, avoiding common causes of illness, and doing things that generally promote health and well-being in later decades. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.